All right, and we are joined in the studio by Kyle Wallace. I was going to say ESPN's Kyle Wallace, and I was going to say The Truth's Kyle Wallace. He's on all of our platforms all the time.
Yeah. We steal our jobs.
Dude, you're the hardest working guy in the building.
Not quite, but I will say I like to burn the midnight oil around here because I get to do what I love. Get to do what I love.
I love it too, and I really wanted to get your take on this because you're actually the one who tipped me off yesterday. You said, hey, John, I hear Mandela Barnes is going to make it official that he's getting in the race. And you were right, he did. You've known Mandela Barnes for a long time. What's your initial reaction to Mandela Barnes getting in the race for governor?
My initial reaction is saying, oh no. Oh no, simply because this is a candidate that has not been able to win statewide, right? And I mean, he only lost that one race that he ran for U.S. Senate last year, but he does not have anything that he can run on. So I think this is could be for potentially the death of the Democratic Party here when it comes to the gubernatorial race, because I believe that he has the possibility to clear the field, and what that would do is open up a path halfway for the Republicans to win the state of Wisconsin, specifically Tom Tiffany.
But he won when he ran for lieutenant governor.
Riding the coattails of Tony Evers. And he should have rode the coattails of Tony Evers right into the U.S. Senate, but he decided not to. So I think it's a bad thing for them simply because he has nothing to run on, John. That's the problem, is that if you have something to run on, then cool. But if you have no accomplishments to run on, that's not good for the Democratic Party. He's just a big name, a great smile, a handsome gentleman. He knows how to talk the
talk. He's on CNN a lot.
Yeah, he's on CNN a lot.
Right behind you. We see him all the time.
Yeah, and so the biggest issue is Wisconsinites want people who actually have a track record that they can run on, right? Tom Tiffany, who's running for the Republican Party, he's been in Congress making things happen, right? You look at David Crowley here in Milwaukee, he's been making things happen. So if you don't have a track record, you're not going to have a big opportunity to win the state of Wisconsin. So I think this is just a losing move for the Democratic Party.
He ran for state Senate, too.
And he lost.
He lost that race,
against
too. He took
Lena Taylor.
So
Lena Taylor was not happy. I remember that.
Yeah, I mean, we can go down history. This is one of the reasons why I'm kind of bothered by it, simply because Lena Taylor delivered for her constituents. That is something that some people may say she might be, a little wild and crazy sometimes.
And now she's a judge.
She is a judge. But she delivered for her constituents. You don't go after somebody who is a Democrat just like you to knock off somebody who's doing right by the constituents, especially when you already have a job in the Wisconsin
and
State Assembly.
And 90% of incumbents in the state legislature get reelected.
Well, that's
so
why he got smoked.
And she was not too happy about that.
So Jeff Mayers, the president of WisPolitics, was on the show with us earlier, and he said two people are celebrating today. Sarah Rodriguez, because now you got Mandela Barnes, David Crowley, and maybe Joel Brennan, all from Milwaukee, going to divide up that vote. And the others are anybody interested in the Republican Party, and you just alluded to this, because not only the races he's lost, Kyle, but, man, he's got kind of some dirt on his background, too, that you can always see it in the campaign ads. Didn't pay his taxes.
Didn't pay his parking citations.
Right.
Which is, it's human. I mean, some of us have maybe been
scoff
a little late
loss
on a parking
one or two,
ticket.
Maybe.
Yeah, but the problem is what's going to destroy him is the defund police and abolish police.
Yep.
You can't do that, right?
Did you see what he said during the Jacob Blake on his official? Did you see that?
I don't recall. Help me.
Oh yeah, he was tweeting. He was tweeting back in the day on his official page, right after it happened, that the police are corrupt. And, so it was.
That's going to be in all the ads.
The violence is too familiar for us. Communities are over-policed, whose children learn early that police officers aren't always serving and protecting them as they should. And he was also upset. In the end, he kept doubling down that the officers should have been charged in that Jacob Blake case. So I don't know. Maybe they'll play good.
I mean, no, the problem is that there are certain things that you can play that plays well. But I think for the majority, as somebody who I definitely think we should reimagine policing. But the first thing I'm calling, listen, if I get robbed or something happens, I'm calling 911. I'm calling the police. Now, it's different when you say maybe we should allocate dollars in different ways. But the police play a very good and integral role for our community. So whenever you say that abolish police, or you wear a shirt that says abolish police or defund police, you put yourself in trouble, especially when you're a politician and understanding you need to get people from across the aisles and from across the state of Wisconsin to support you. So I think that was something that's going to haunt him if he does get the overall nomination from the
Democratic
Party.
Kyle, he becomes the front runner. That's what everybody's saying. But unless David Crowley gets out of the race, or especially if Joel Brennan gets in the race, he's not really the front runner, because that vote is going to get divided. And Sarah Rodriguez, who's won statewide and is from a different part of the state, I mean, it's hard enough to win coming out of Milwaukee. If you got three people coming out of Milwaukee, how do any of them survive that if they all stay in the primary?
Yeah, bad day for David Crowley yesterday.
Yeah,
very bad day for David Crowley, because simply because he was going to probably dominate the Milwaukee market.
Yep.
And now he's going to have to, like you said, split that Milwaukee market with Mandela Barnes. And it's really going to see who the Democratic Party decides to support. But I'm glad Tony Evers is kind of staying out of it and just let everybody figure things out.
Great perspective, GKB's Kyle Wallace. We appreciate it, Kyle. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you all so much for having me on
this show. It is 5:13 at WTMJ. Traffic and weather up next, and then CBS's Major Garrett with us live. I know you're excited about our trivia tomorrow. Julie and I play trivia tomorrow at Left's Lucky Town, coming out at 7 o'clock. It's going to be fun. It's going to be good. Major Garrett, CBS's Chief Washington correspondent, would definitely come to trivia, and he would smoke everybody.
Oh, my gosh.
If he was here in Milwaukee. But he's in balmy
Washington.
What kind of trivia? It's general trivia. So there's categories. There's like a history category.
Ooh, I have a trivia
sports.
I have one for him.
Oh, what do you got?
Okay. So, Major, do you know which president of the United States, former president, actually was asked by the Green Bay Packers to play center? But he said no, and he went to Yale Law School instead.
Gerald Ford.
Good job!
See?
Oh,
we
yeah.
need him on
he
our team.
Smoke us. Good work.
You know, you get a lot of time off for, you know, writing books and going on tours to promote the book. Can you set up a book drop thing here in Milwaukee and come on a night we're doing trivia?
Oh, my gosh.
Maybe like next year we could plan
this. Oh, that'd be great.
Wow, that's a good idea. Let's do that.
Because we're all waiting for the next book. I mean, we've been waiting for like a year and a half for Agent of Betrayal, your awesome podcast, to come back.
Ooh.
Now we're waiting on the books.
Yes.
I mean,
the pressure mounts indeed. But we'll figure something out. We'll figure with or without a book. I'll come out for trivia night.
Okay. Fun.
All right.
So, Major, when you were
that would be fun.
Recording on Agent of Betrayal, you were walking on one of the trails where he did the drop offs. Were you filming at the same time as you did that?
No, we just recorded.
Oh, okay, because it sounded so good. Okay, sorry.
Oh, it's the best thing out there.
I know.
I mean, Joe Rogan ain't got crap on Major Garrett.
You totally.
Agent of Betrayal is what you need to check out. Hey, Major, we wanted to ask you about something.
That's why I love you both. That's why.
That's true. It's true.
The most absurd things.
I wanted to ask you all day because I've been trying to get some perspective on the boat strike in Venezuela and the second boat strike, and now it's causing a real firestorm where you are in Washington. Give us a little bit of background on what happened and your perspective on what it means.
So this was the very first of an aerial campaign launched by the Trump administration against suspected drug boats, September 2nd. And the Washington Post reported that there was a strike. It damaged the boat massively. Two of the passengers survived and were clinging in some form or another to some remnants of the boat. And then another strike was undertaken to make sure that the two survivors died. And all of the remains of the boat were essentially obliterated. The first reaction from the Pentagon and the White House was to deny it in its totality, because there was, in the Washington Post, original reporting that Pete Hegseth, the Secretary of Defense, Secretary of War, that's what the administration calls it, Congress calls it, Secretary of Defense, said, kill them all, gave the personal order. After a couple of days, the White House and Pentagon conceded that there was a second strike, but that Hegseth did not personally order it. Today, on camera, he said he was at a different meeting, that he watched the first strike on live video feed, then went to a meeting, and then found out some number of hours later that there was a second strike. Mark Warner, the Democrat in Virginia, vice chairman of the Intelligence Committee, told reporters this afternoon there might have been a third or a fourth strike. Here's why it all matters. Under the Geneva Convention, under applicable Pentagon policy, if there are combatants, even combatants that we have designated combatants, and it's unclear legally if anyone in these boats is actually a combatant at war with the United States. The administration says they are, but they're on pretty shaky legal ground with that assertion. But even if they are, the Manual of Warfare, the Pentagon, says if there are combatants in distress, they are to be rescued, not killed, if they don't pose any threat. And most reasonable people would conclude that someone clinging to some remnants of a bombed boat in the middle of the ocean does not pose a threat to either combatants in the area or the nation writ large. Therefore, you should rescue them. Here's why this is important. Not only is that part of the Geneva Convention, not only is that part of the manual at the Pentagon, but in October, another boat strike occurred, and there were survivors, and those survivors were rescued and repatriated to other countries. What does that tell us? Or what does that very strongly suggest? That there was a reassessment, a very quiet reassessment within the Pentagon after the September 2nd episode, and the next time there were survivors, the survivors were not killed with a second, third, or fourth strike, but were rescued and repatriated to another country. All of this is part of what I think the country should be paying attention to, which is an escalating campaign from the sky. And the president said today, we are soon going to carry this to land. He didn't say which land. It doesn't mean Venezuela. It could mean Colombia. The implication was Colombia. But that there could be some sort of military strikes on land against a sovereign country under the authority to kill all suspected narco-terrorists because the administration says they deserve to die. That's a pretty heavy responsibility. It's a heavy action. It would have lots of implications in the region, and it would essentially place the war on drugs under the Trump administration in an entirely different context than any previous administration had ever pursued it.
Well, and also there's thousands of Marines, Major, on along the shores of Venezuela and in the and also in the Caribbean. So, I mean, it looks
there are three battleships, and there is an entire aircraft carrier strike force, and there's about every military asset the United States can bring to bear in Southcom, which is this particular region, all within striking distance of Venezuela. And over the weekend, though he has no authority to do this, President Trump said the skies over Venezuela are closed in their entirety. However, there are some flights that are permissible. Those are flights of Venezuelans from the United States back to Venezuela because the president has denied them immigration status under temporary protected status. So he's sending Venezuelans back to their country, even though he says it's being ruled by a terrorist and a narco leader, Nicolas Maduro. So there's a lot of confusing aspects to what's going on in Venezuela. But I would just say this. The story about any of these individual boat strikes and their legality is part of a larger story of kinetic warfare being carried out and hyper-aggressively so by this administration.
He is CBS Chief Washington Correspondent Major Garrett. If you're looking for a Christmas idea, put one of these on your list for the person in your life who loves current events or history. The Big Truth, Major Garrett's book, and his other book, Mr. Trump's Wild Ride, they're both still available wherever you buy your books. Major, we appreciate it. Thank you so much for spending some time with us.
We'll talk next week.
All right, let's bring in Chief Meteorologist Brian Niznanski. Niz, we haven't seen you since Thanksgiving, so we're going to walk it back a few days. How was Thanksgiving?
Sure. Thanksgiving was great. We had a wonderful Packers victory to kick things off with family and friends Thanksgiving Day, and it was just overall a great day. Food was good. Family was good. And then we went up north for a few days up to St. Germain. And, you know, when we made the plan to head up north, we're thinking, oh, let's go find some snow. At that time, little did we know that we would be leaving a big-time snowstorm here in southeastern Wisconsin.
We have a texter, actually, since you just talked about the Packers, from 262 saying the National Weather Service, NIS, is forecasting a low about 0 degrees and a high about 20 for Sunday's Packers-Bears game. Is that true?
Yeah, I could see, like, game time temperatures probably in the teens at Lambeau for the Packers game. So, yeah, if you have plans to head up there for that big game, that is going to be a big game on Sunday. Afternoon start, by the way, around 3:30, I think. I would say teens for temperatures. But then once the sun sets, we could definitely dip, you know, maybe down to around 10 by the end of the game. So very cold, but nothing out of the ordinary for Lambeau Field in December.
I know we're asking several days out. Do you think it might be blustery? Will it be pretty calm day?
I think overall, like, I mean, this time of year, you know, can get pretty breezy, but I'm not seeing anything that looks to be like crazy wind. In fact, our biggest shot of cold and breezy conditions will be coming starting like this time tomorrow into tomorrow night. And by Thursday morning, much of the area could be around zero.
Oh,
like
my
actual temperature.
Wow.
Wind chill could be as low by Thursday morning down to 15 below zero. So we have really jumped into what looks like a very, very winter-like pattern. There's some signs next week that we break out of this, but for the rest of the week, it's going to be straight-up winter.
We'll be seeing their breath.
For sure. Frozen breath. So we had the president of the Snowmobile Club Association on the show.
Cool.
And she's so excited. She said it's the first time in the last 40 years that there's been this kind of snow cover this early in the season for the entire state, and they're out grooming the trails.
Wow.
And they are jazzed because, you know, Niz, the last couple of years, especially 2 years ago, we talked about how trails literally didn't open.
It's awesome to see. And now we have cold enough temperatures. And, you know, obviously this isn't all going to melt overnight. So any kind of base that they can establish, I don't know, maybe she had some insight on it. But when I was up north, they were chatting about, obviously, in order to open up the trails, you got to have deer hunting season over with. And then you also need a lot of these trail networks go over the inland lakes. So you need to have the lakes frozen enough to make that obviously safe. That's not for all trails, but a good portion of them.
And they have gates. A lot of them have gates. They want to make sure that the trails are cleared of trees. They can't do that safely till after gun deer. But she expects in the next week or so that some of the trails could definitely open up.
That would be awesome. And I think the cold weather could support that. There could be a little additional snow. We got another light snow chance tonight and maybe another one towards the end of the week. I'm not looking at any major snow events except for far northern Wisconsin with the days of the very cold northwest wind off of Lake Superior. Like if we're talking Vilas County, Ashland, Iron County, the Snowbelt region up there could get additional lake effect snow. So at the very least, I could see those being spots that open up.
John, tell Niz how fast you went on a snowmobile.
Oh, first time I went on a snowmobile a couple of years ago. I was a snowmobile virgin, and I got on an open lake with my buddy, and he said, "Let's go." We punched it. I looked down, Niz. I was going 100 miles an hour. It was incredible, and it
scared
me.
You got a need for speed. Yeah. No, that's – I don't know if I've ever hit 100, but I'm usually with my kids or my parents. And there is a spot, there's a couple spots, if anybody listening knows. The High Line is in Vilas County. That's just outside of St. Germain. You can open it up really good. Yep. And then right on Little St. Germain, you can really open it up. There's a stretch there. But I don't think I've hit 100. You got –
Well,
you got,
the best part of the story was that I looked up and Michelle passed me.
What?
Yeah.
Good for you. Good for Michelle.
It was incredible. Yeah, swear to God, it was unbelievable. Yeah, it scared me, but it didn't feel like it. It was exhilarating. It was really cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
yeah, and I mean, there are spots like I don't know if I'd do it on my first time, but as long as you're in a comfortable straightaway spot, like that's the time to do it. Problem is, you get. I mean, snowmobiling, you could be as safe as you possibly can, but you cannot account for what others' behavior is going
on. It was on a frozen
on
lake, so it was a big, wide lake, so you could really
and
daytime,
that's perfect.
Good view.
Totally, and that's the spot to do it. Yeah. Totally.
The neighbors called the DNR on John.
Yeah.
But they couldn't catch me.
Yeah. Hey, it's great. I love snowmobiling.
Me too. Lead us through tonight and the next few days. What are we looking at?
Okay, so as we've been talking about, a chance of some very light snow late tonight into tomorrow morning. Might be a case, again, where you wake up tomorrow morning, you got to do a little scraping of the driveway. We're talking like a half inch or less of snow. So for tonight, temperature holding steady around 20. Tomorrow's high, 31. Now for Thursday, partly cloudy skies and a high temperature of only 16. Again, remember Thursday morning, I'm going with a low of 3 in Milwaukee, but inland spots could be dipping below zero Thursday morning. On Friday, partly cloudy with a few flurries possible in the afternoon, maybe a little light snow Friday night, a high of 23, and then Saturday mostly cloudy and 24. So again, for averages, this is more typical of January, guys. We really slipped into the dead of winter.
We sure have. Chief Meteorologist Brian Niznanski. Thanks, Niz. We'll talk tomorrow.
All right. We'll see you guys.
Yeah. It's 544 WTMJ. Morgan Geyser, the Slenderman stabber in the news because She supposedly cut her bracelet off. She's been brought back. Her attorney, Anthony Cotton, with us up next. Morgan Geiser is back in Wisconsin. She was one of the Slender Man stabbers. Peyton Lautner was the young woman that was stabbed by Geiser and another classmate. Geiser was put in a group home, and then she allegedly cut off her bracelet, and she apparently fled to Illinois, where she was captured, extradited back to Wisconsin. Anthony Cotton, good friend of the show, has been her attorney for a very long time, and he is with us this afternoon. Tony, I know you're juggling a busy day. Thanks for making some time for us.
Hey, good afternoon, you two. Thanks for having me on.
I want to begin with some of the newer information in the case. You sent a letter to the judge in Waukesha County, basically, and I'm paraphrasing, so please excuse me for that, saying that she should be, Morgan Geiser, should be sent back to the Oshkosh Mental Health Facility and not be sitting in jail. Why do you believe that?
Well, because she was found not guilty by reason of mental disease or defect. And so, I think it's pretty straightforward that if a person was found not guilty due to their mental health condition, even if they have a slip up down the road, they shouldn't be housed in jail awaiting their hearing. Ironically, if she were to lose the upcoming revocation hearing, she would go back to Winnebago anyways. So there's no scenario where she gets housed in jail, and I don't think it makes sense to keep her there in the meantime.
Anthony, people are saying, okay, this is Morgan Geiser trying to have it both ways. If she was well enough to be released from Winnebago Mental Health Facility, she shouldn't go back there. She should wait in jail like anyone else. If I cut off my bracelet, I likely have to wait in jail. Now, I know my case is different, but how do you respond to that? That she was well enough to get out of the facility, so now she should pay the consequences if she did something wrong.
Yeah, I think in a traditional case where a person isn't not guilty due to their mental health condition, that would make a lot of sense. You know, if a person is just out on bail for robbing a bank, for example, or shooting someone, and they don't have any mental health condition and they just cut off their bracelet, well, then obviously that person should be housed in jail. But I think it's different where you have, number one, a finding that she was not guilty of her crime due to her mental illness, and number two, the order in place that she is to be housed at Winnebago. You know, that's, like I said before, that's where she would go if she loses the conditional release hearing. I mean, we theoretically waived her hearing tomorrow, she would go to Winnebago. So I don't think there's any reason why it wouldn't make sense to send her there now.
But she was no longer in Winnebago because, as you had some doctors testify to, that she no longer has schizophrenia. So clearly what just happened didn't work. So again, John says you can't have it both ways. She no longer has schizophrenia. So why would she go back to the mental health institution?
Well, I don't know where she'll end up going. I mean, at this point, it's up to the judge whether he approves my request to house her in Winnebago while we're awaiting the final hearing. But just because she doesn't have schizophrenia, it does not mean that there aren't mental health conditions still going on. I mean, I think I've made clear in other interviews, mental health is, you know, it's not a linear path. There's ups and downs, and there have been with Morgan as well. So there's days that are good and there's days that are bad. I think what's going to be really interesting at the hearing is when more facts come out about what exactly the circumstances were behind leaving the group home, why she made that decision. Once all that is aired out, I think it'll be very interesting.
So you're saying that she may have more mental health issues?
Yeah, I think everybody agrees there are mental health issues. The question is whether they are, the question is whether or not she's whether she's a violent person. You know, that's to house somebody in Winnebago requires the court to make a finding of dangerousness. She didn't do anything violent when she was out. Yes, this was not a good development in the case, but she didn't do anything violent. She didn't arm herself. She didn't, you know, go and try to find the Lightner family. So I think, you know, there's good arguments that Morgan is still not a dangerous person.
Do you think this was a mistake, that this should not have happened? She should have stayed in the mental health institution?
I don't think so. I mean, all three doctors supported her release, and you had three these were three top-notch doctors, some of the best ones in Wisconsin, and they all independently looked at this. One was even hired by the prosecution, one was hired by the judge, and one was appointed for us. So they all come at it from, you know, a different perspective, and all three of them reached the same conclusion. So I don't know any judge that would reject the findings of three doctors and hold someone in custody when the conclusions are that the person should be released.
Anthony Cotton is with us, Morgan Geiser's attorney. Do you still believe, will you still advocate that she be released to a group home when this thing settles down?
Yeah, I mean, I think the question becomes when that release should happen, whether it's now or at some point in the future. But I do think that she shouldn't obviously not spend her life at the Winnebago Mental Health Facility.
You know, what's terrible is that she didn't even last 2 weeks. Like, she was let go on September, or it was signed off on September 17th. Anthony, she didn't even last 2 weeks before. Wasn't it 2 weeks?
I think it was 2 months. Yeah, it was 2 months.
Excuse me, two months.
Yeah. No, it was not an ideal situation. And obviously, I think before I pass judgment on what happened, it's important for me to gather all the information that I can gather about why she did this.
Okay, Anthony, you know her better than the rest of us. Why do you think she did this?
I don't have a good answer for you right now. I mean, that's something that we'll have to discuss. And I think that having her evaluated and examined by doctors will be, you know, like I said before, mental health can have its ups and downs. There can be people that, like Morgan, who make a poor decision that's not well thought out. And now she's paying the consequences for that.
You brought up Peyton Lautner. I find myself thinking about her a lot and thinking about her family. And when she was released, Morgan, I always take the dad's perspective, and I know you're a parent too.
Yeah.
How scary that would be for me that this young woman, and she was just a girl when this crime occurred, how scared I would be if the offender was released. Do you think about Peyton's family? Do you think Morgan thinks about Peyton's family?
I really can't speak. I mean, I know Morgan has expressed her condolences in the past. I think about them all the time. I have a great deal of empathy towards them. I'd say I spend an equal amount of time thinking about them as I do Morgan. And it's horrible what happened to them. I've never once diminished that.
That's true. That's absolutely true.
You know, the one thing that you did say when she was going to be released was that you were worried about something like this happening, where there's outside influences, like the person that was even trying to sell the Slenderman package of her drawings on Facebook when she was behind, when she was still, you know, into mental health institution. So I don't know how, if she goes into a group home, this could be prevented again from happening.
Yeah, I think we talked about this last time possibly, but like the number one risk factor in terms of her having a problem has always been, you know, whether or not there are going to be men in the community who, for whatever reason, usually they're creepy men, you know, they gravitate towards her and they try to develop a relationship with Morgan. And she's better off, of course, rebuffing that. But when you've spent your adolescent years in a mental health facility and you haven't formed the same kind of adolescent experiences that kids have in middle school and high school, there's a lot of work to be done there. And I think working on relationships is going to be something to focus on in the future.
When do you expect that you will see her?
I think I'll see her later this week and again next week is my guess.
Felony criminal charges are possible if it's discovered that she cut off the mandated electronic tracking device. Should she face felony charges?
I don't think so, but I haven't really studied the statute. My recollection of the escape statute is it relates more to, you know, when a person is being housed in a jail or correctional facility. So that'll be up to the Dane County District Attorney's Office whether or not they think the elements fit here.
He is Attorney Anthony Cotton. We always appreciate it. You never dodge us. You're always willing to talk about what's going on with your clients, and we appreciate that. Thank you, Anthony.
Yeah, sorry I couldn't be in the studios. Have a good day.
Yeah, thank you.